You have certainly heard of Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind. You've either read the book or seen the movie or both. Well, there is a book about Gone with the Wind, about how it was marketed. It's Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind, a bestseller's odyssey from Atlanta to Hollywood. It was co-authored by Ellen F. Brown and John Wiley, Jr. John Wiley is in the studio with me. For the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. John, I'm talking really about the book so much as about the way it was sold and marketed, turned into a movie, the way it is even sold today in modern times.
Absolutely. We really started out writing a biography of the book, not a biography of Margaret Mitchell. That has been done, and certainly people have read the book and seen the movie, as you mentioned, so rehashing that wasn't of interest to us. But we did find it fascinating how she wrote the book, how it was marketed during the Great Depression, how it went all over the world, and how 75 years later it is still a booming business.
I've talked to many authors, and you being an author would know this, how very difficult it is to get a publisher, how difficult it is to get an agent to bring your book in front of a publisher. What did Margaret Mitchell face?
Absolutely. It is difficult for most people. As it turns out, a great deal of luck came her way. The very first publisher who saw it bought it. He immediately saw the magic that all of these millions of readers over the years would see and made her an offer immediately.
The book is an epic, as everybody knows. It is a very long book. Just as you think it's about to end, it goes into another phase. And I'm wondering, you know, the publisher looking at it might say, this is overwhelming.
I think they did, although at the same time, when they first looked at it, the manuscript was so disorganized. I don't think they had a good feel for how long the book really was. In fact, as the editing went on and as it got closer to publication, they came back to Margaret Mitchell and said, this is a lot longer than we thought. We're going to need to change your contract here. She wasn't too happy with that because she said, you know, you made your deal based on what I gave you, and in fact, I've cut it since then. But that all worked out in the end, and I think they realized, yes, it's a very long book, but it's a heck of a book.
What attracted you and your co-author, Ellen, to this book, to the project of the marketing of Gone with the Wind?
I have been interested in Gone with the Wind since I was 10 years old. I saw the movie in Lynchburg, Virginia, absolutely loved it, then checked the book out of the bookmobile. We lived out in the county. That was the closest library during the summer. Took me a month to read it, but liked the book even better. And I have been collecting Gone with the Wind and researching Gone with the Wind for more than 40 years. About 5 years ago, my co-author, Ellen Brown, who is a freelance writer, approached me about writing a profile about my collection for a magazine. She came to my house, did the interview, and I found out she was a lawyer, and we just sort of started talking about some of the legal issues related to the book and that kind of thing, and we just really became interested in going beyond our interview that day. And finally she said, well, that's a fascinating topic. Is there a book about that? And I said, well, no, there are other books touch on that, but no one's done a book on the book. And she said, well, you ought to do that. And I said, well, that sounds good, but I have a full-time job. So we kept in touch, and about a year and a half later, we had lunch, and by the end of lunch, we had decided we were going to write this book together.
What did you find? You knew what you were looking for when you went in, but you must have found far more than you were looking for.
Absolutely. The main two repositories of information are Margaret Mitchell's papers at the University of Georgia and her publisher's papers, the Macmillan Company, there at the New York Public Library. And we both spent just weeks poring through those papers and found a great deal of interesting information. Some we included, some we didn't. Some sort of trivial, but I thought exciting. We found out, for instance, what Rhett Butler's middle name was. And in the book and in the movie, we know it's the initial K, but we never know what that is. But a fan wrote to Margaret Mitchell and asked her, and she told that. We also found a letter from her
John, let me stop you. Are you going to leave us hanging like that?
Of course. That's a good sales point. Our publicist told us, if someone asks, you need to tell them, read the book. But another thing that we found, Margaret Mitchell always refused to write a sequel to Gone with the Wind. And she, her fans, readers, publishers, the movie folks, they all said, you have to write another story. We have to continue this. And she said, no, it ended where it ended. I don't know what happened. I'm just going to leave it. But in the 40s, she got one more letter from the from a producer saying, would you please write a sequel? And she wrote back and spelled out why she didn't think there could be a sequel, because this is what she thought happened to Rhett and Scarlett. And that is one of the few, if the only time she ever put in writing what she thought really happened to the characters.
The publishing world, when she wrote Gone with the Wind, and the movie industry, when it made Gone with the Wind into a movie, is far different from the publishing world today and the movie industry today. The dynamics, the money, everything. What did it take to turn Gone with the Wind into a movie?
Well, as you mentioned, both the publishing and the film industry are entirely different. And we tried to point out, in terms of the publishing industry, this was in the days before computers and email and that kind of thing. Edits were literally done cutting and pasting with scissors and glue. There was no select and move as in a computer. You sent letters back and forth between Atlanta and New York. You didn't email. The movie, the same way, huge, huge production, although I think certainly the movie process hasn't changed that much except for computer enhancement. You still have someone who writes a story, directs it, films it, the actors and actresses. But Gone with the Wind, the movie, the feeling of the public, they loved this book. And they became so involved in the making of the movie. Everybody had an opinion who should play Scarlett, who should play Rhett. This was front page news across the country. Yes, there was strange things going on in Europe. War was about to start. But people here in America wanted to know, was Clark Gable going to play Rhett Butler? And who the heck was going to play Scarlett? And it was just, the anticipation was tremendous.
What was the reaction to the person who actually did play Scarlett? An English person.
Yes. When the producer, David Selznick, finally chose Vivian Leigh, a British actress, relatively unknown in this country, to play Scarlett, there was a little bit of hesitation from some people, but then several people in the South, specifically one woman with the United Daughters of the Confederacy, came out and said, well, thank God it's not a Yankee. So I think the fact that they could deal with someone from England rather than someone from up north playing this southern heroine.
John Wiley, there is a tremendous amount of history in Gone with the Wind. Very early on, Margaret Mitchell points out that the war is going to take longer than anyone in the South predicts, and even hints that it could be a very lost cause early on in the book, not waiting until the end of the book. And yet, what most people remember is the interplay between Scarlett and Rhett, the main characters. And they remember, from the movie especially, some of the minor characters who are indelible in their minds.
That is absolutely correct. And I think I have several goals with this book. I want people to appreciate Margaret Mitchell, but I also want our book to inspire people to go back and read Margaret Mitchell's original novel. It is so different from the movie. I absolutely love the movie. It is just Hollywood at its best. But if you read Margaret Mitchell's novel, she tells the story of the real South. Terra was a rambling farmhouse. It was not this columned mansion in the movie. I understand why David Selznick did that. That's what the general public wanted to see. But she told the story of a family living really on the frontier of Georgia and how they dealt with life. The movie pretties it up in a bit, in a way, and of course is that typical Old South Moonlight and Magnolias that people expect. But if you read the book, as you mentioned, Margaret Mitchell doesn't have a romantic view of the South. In fact, the two characters who represent the Old South, Melanie and Ashley, At the end of the book, Melanie dies. Ashley's a broken man. The people representing the New South, Scarlet and Rhett, are these brash people who make fun of the cause, and their goal is to make money and be comfortable and move on. And I think they represent the New South, how it finally got past the war and realized it needed to move on.
In light of what you just said about Hollywood glamorizing the Old South, there are places in the South, in both Georgia and South Carolina, that claim to have Tara-like mansions so that the tourists can see what they saw in Hollywood. And yet, the philosophy remains. The patriarch of the family reminded Scarlett in the book and in the movie to be mindful of the land, absolutely, whether it was a farm or a mansion.
Yes, that is one of the most famous lines in the book, is when Scarlett's father, Gerald, tells her that land is the only thing that lasts. It's the only thing that keeps you going. And in fact, at the very end of the movie, after Rhett leaves, Scarlett recalls hearing her father telling her that. And that's when she vows to go home to Tara.
From what you've been saying, John, you obviously have a great love of Gone with the Wind and how it's been handled in the years since it was written. It's even being handled today.
Yes. Margaret Mitchell surprisingly did not live very long after Gone with the Wind was published. It came out in 1936, and she died in 1949. She left the rights to Gone with the Wind to her husband. He was not a well man and only lived another 3 years. He then left it to her brother, Stevens Mitchell, who controlled the estate for almost 30 years. When he died in the early 1980s, he left it to two of his law partners who have continued to oversee the entire copyright and the novel for all of these years since.
Where does the copyright stand now? It's still certainly owned.
The estate still oversees Gone with the Wind, and the copyright, due to some extensions in U.S. law, is still running through 2031. So it will be 95 years since Gone with the Wind came out. There is a possibility, of course, that Congress could extend that again, but as of now, the copyright is set to run out in 2031.
Again, the book is entitled Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind, A Bestseller's Odyssey from Atlanta to Hollywood, and it was co-authored by Ellen F. Brown and John Wiley, Jr. And lest you think we're going to stop here, we are not. Ellen came to you because you had collected quite a bit of memorabilia and information about Gone with the Wind. What do you have?
It's probably easier to tell you what I don't have and what I'm still looking for, but I've always been fascinated by the book. I have more than 800 different editions of the novel from all over the world. I have a great deal of movie stuff. I have original seats from Lowe's Grand Theater in Atlanta, where Gone with the Wind premiered. I have call sheets and posters, and they did a lot of novelty items at the time to promote the movie, handkerchiefs and scarves and perfume and candy and stationery, and just always looking for those kind of things that came out in 1939, 1940.
Theater seats, and I can understand that, but memorabilia, what did they do? I'm familiar with some of the things that movies do today, T-shirts and things. Sometimes coffee mugs, if that's appropriate for the movie. Funeral parlor fans, or what?
I haven't found one of those, but if someone knows, I'm always looking. Actually, Gone with the Wind really was the first adult film that was marketed as heavily as it was. Disney had learned that magic of Snow White, Pinocchio, to make all of these sort of dolls and hankies and scarves and that kind of thing. But Gone with the Wind was really the first movie not for children that was marketed that heavily. They had Scarlett O'Hara girdles, lipstick, perfume. They did a Scarlett O'Hara wedding dress. They did hats. They did just almost anything you can think of, they would slap that label on, and people would buy it. They loved the movie. They had paper dolls. They had coloring books. People just, they went to the movie, they loved it, and like we do today, they wanted something to take home to remind them of that.
I'm going to ask a question that you weren't around for at the time, But did people want to see the movie because they had read Gone with the Wind, or did they want to see the movie because Hollywood so successfully marketed it?
I think at that time, most people who wanted to see the movie had read the book. There was a Gallup poll, I believe in early 39, that estimated that about 13 million people in America had read the book. So there was certainly a ready audience. They wanted to see what Hollywood was going to do with this story, what it was going to look like on the screen. But I think certainly you've got to take your hats off to the producer and the studios for promoting it. It brought in people who had never read the book, who also wanted to see, what is this all about? It was a 3-hour and 42-minute movie. It was an event of its day.
Even today, if you buy it on DVD or Blu-ray, it is a long movie.
It is, but I personally don't think it drags a minute. I just think it picks you up and carries you along, and I feel the same way about the book. It's 1,037 pages, but it just moves. You turn that page wanting to know what happens next. But again, I would challenge anyone listening to please read Gone with the Wind, the book. It's just such a wonderful story. Margaret Mitchell did a wonderful job. They're just, the characters are fascinating, and you care about them. I told someone the first time I finished reading it, I just felt like the best weekend of my life with my best friends in the world had just ended, and I was so sad. I wanted them to come back. I wanted to know what they were doing now, and I still feel that way about the book.
Again, you have a reverence for Gone with the Wind and what has been happening with it. What would you like people to take away from the book that you and Helen Brown have written?
I think I want people to realize that Gone with the Wind was not a fluke. Margaret Mitchell was a writer from childhood. She wrote on the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. She had written other short stories. And Gone with the Wind was something she had worked very long and hard on. At the same time, she found out a lot of things about publishing and the book world in general, some copyright issues. It went overseas. There were a lot of pirated issues. And she just fought for her right. She said, this is my book. She looked at it as her child, and she wanted to protect it. And really, any writer today owes a great deal to Margaret Mitchell for all the work she did to eventually get the United States into a copyright convention that now helps protect books around the world. And I just want people to get a good feel of how hard she worked to protect this baby of hers once it went out into the world.
Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind is available in so many different media that you can take your choice. After you read it or listen to it or see it, then you might want to pick up a copy of this book, Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind, a bestseller's odyssey from Atlanta to Hollywood, co-written by Ellen Brown and John Wiley, Jr. John Wiley is in the studio with me. John, thank you.
Thank you so much.
For the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.